about a Friday break from the news. I recently stumbled across a website where people were debating, seriously, whether pianist Keith Jarrett was God. The Los Angeles Times calls Keith's trio with drummer Jack DeJohnette and bassist Gary Peacock very simply jazz at its finest. Best in the world, says the International Herald Tribune. No, it's the best in the 21st century. That from Bloomberg News. Well, now comes a reminder of what all the fuss is about. Keith Jarrett, Jack DeJohnette, and Gary Peacock playing the jazz standard When You Wish Upon a Star on a recently released 2-DVD set of the trio performing in Tokyo in the mid-80s. It's part of a 25th anniversary celebration that also includes a short tour and Setting Standards, a boxed set of the 3 CDs that launched the so-called Standards Project. The trio's, at the time, controversial idea to interpret the Great American Songbook. Keith Jarrett joins us from his home in New Jersey with more on that time that produced that music. Keith, welcome.
Thank you.
On the DVD, fans can see the player's techniques. We watch your hands, your foot on the pedal, and your face. You're smiling a lot. What are your memories of these sessions?
My memory of the visual things is quite limited because watching myself is a little different than other people watching me.
What's it like for you?
Sometimes it's great, but sometimes, you know, I have to look away because I might look like I'm into something, but the part of me that is the critic says to myself on the screen, how can you mean that? You can't be getting off on that. That doesn't make sense to me.
Well, and we should, you know, for the uninitiated, we should, you know, let people know that you're very, there's a physicality when you play. I want to listen, for instance, when Jack DeJohnette and Gary Peacock first join you on Stella by Starlight, and your face reads pure joy. We'll listen to that. Now that might be easier for you to watch, but there are times when you seem to be tortured. What is going on?
Well, it isn't torture, but it is, let's say you're getting information, you're getting how that information is going to be used, you're getting the dynamics, you're trying to do all this on the spur of the moment. That expression has to do with either triumphing over that situation or wishing I could have pushed it a little further. But it interestingly, when I started playing with Blakey, Art Blakey, I hadn't played with any major band up until that moment, and we played in a place where the piano was so, so stiff. And since I hadn't played seriously for a long time, a lot of the reviewers were, you know, just amazed at the music, and they said, Keith is like, he's so into it. He has this expression of ecstatic something or other. I don't remember what they said. And the truth was, my fingers were bleeding under my fingernails, and I was being tortured at that moment. So,
I'm sorry.
You never know, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Talking about the trio, we know you'd all known each other. You'd played with Jack DeJohnette, with Miles Davis, and elsewhere. But they both grew up as pianists. How did that add to the trio sound?
That's one of the best questions you could ask.
Okay.
I began as a drummer, playing on tabletops in my kitchen, and I ended up with a drum set pretty early in my teens and was sort of trying to be the drummer in that band, especially when they weren't filling up spaces with their own playing. So something with a lot of space in it. And Jack and I, when we were with Charles Lloyd, we often would go to jam sessions after the gig, and people would say, why don't you play? So we would go up on the stage and go to the wrong instruments. I mean, the ones people didn't expect us to go to. And that's where we would be. So the short answer is, that's one of the reasons this trio has lasted this long. We understand the music inside out from all each other's perspectives as someone knowledgeable with more than one of the three instruments. And because of that, I don't have to say anything to them, because if they were the pianist, they would know what they would require of the bass player, for example. So that kind of flexibility is almost unheard of in, you know, a major group, I think.
Well, you know, I want to ask, too, because you mentioned banging on the table as a kid, but you were also a child prodigy. You played classical piano.
Yeah.
And you had an incendiary solo career. I'm wondering, what else did the trio give you? Because, you know, people were, you know, very just, you know, upset. You have said that there was something that happened in the trio work that helped you escape something that was happening in the solo work. I'm reading that you felt that listeners increasingly wanted to see a virtuoso genius immolate himself, that there was this expectation of you as a soloist, and working with the trio and working on standards gave you some respite from that.
Oh, yes. I keep them away from each other because the techniques that I need to use in each of those situations are completely different. Like what your left hand does, what your right hand does, all what your mind does, all that stuff. But in a way, it was a perfect way to balance the equation for me. I wouldn't call it immolation anymore, if that's what I actually said, but I would say that I now can pick and choose times in my life when solo makes sense to me. People were expecting actually more of the same, and when people start expecting more of the same, that's time for someone who improvises to stop for a while.
I read too that they were increasingly expecting that the more of the same would be sort of a magic act.
Did I say magic act?
No, I just did.
Okay, I wouldn't have put it that way, but let's just use your statement for a minute.
Okay.
I expect the magic act, and as a result, I have to know how to know when to do it and when not to. In other words, I can't be overconfident and on tour doing solo, or I'll get used to some kind of habit pattern that's against my better judgment. So I'm the one with the greatest expectations. The audience is there because of my expectations being that great.
But you can't do it. I'd imagine it's very hard to do it every night.
Oh, you can't. You cannot play from zero for 2 hours healthily very often. That's true.
Welcome back. That's God Bless the Child from Setting Standards, the box set that's part of a celebration of Keith Jarrett's Standards Trio, Jarrett on piano, Jack DeJohnette drums, and bassist Gary Peacock. For more on the tour and CDs and the songs we're playing, go to hear-now.org. But back to Keith Jarrett. And Keith, it's hard to imagine now when everyone, including Rod Stewart, is singing jazz standards. But in 1983, standards were passé, so why did you decide to do them?
Because it was a forgotten language. and we had first dibs. It was a radical thought. In fact, it was so radical, Gary couldn't believe I was asking him to do this. And Gary said, I had to investigate your work up to that time to see whether I trusted you that we were doing something important. And I had to have dinner with them and tell them the reasons I had for this, which was to not possess the music, not write clever new pieces that they don't last for any length of time. They're just like little niblets that jazzers seem to come up with, and then they start improvising. I wanted something that was holistic. Like, say, some group gets a contract if they have their own music. This trio was supposed to actually completely bypass that trend and force the listener to listen to how we're playing the music, which to me is essentially what jazz is about. How do you play? It's not what you're playing. But on the other hand, the best era in American melody writing and songwriting has got to be the era we're dealing with. And I said to the guys, you know, we've all been sidemen and we've all been leaders up to this point. What if we all become sidemen? Remember how privileged it is to be a sideman. And we don't rehearse, so nobody tells anybody else. I don't tell Gary how to play. I don't tell Jack whether to use sticks or brushes. And the three of us have had such an enormous batch of musical experience that we're ready for anything when we play.
Let's listen to When I Fall in Love, Victor Young and Edward Heyman's classic, from Keith Jarrett, Jack DeJohnette, and Gary Peacock. Keith, did you say you don't rehearse?
Don't rehearse.
Do you also not really even see each other that much to keep
it
fresh?
We don't see each other between gigs.
At all?
No, not really.
Is that to keep it fresh?
No, it's just trust. Like, here's how it goes. This is hard for musicians, even other musicians, to believe. We just show up. That's the whole game plan. Show up, be undrugged, be healthy, be ready to play. I said to the two guys, this is the deal. We already know this material, and that's what's so radical about this idea. People will think we're doing something similar, and if we come out with a zillion albums, as long as we keep the same principles, it'll never be the same.
Well, on the other hand, you have composed some of the most beautiful music. A couple of your cuts are on the DVD, Writer, for one, on the two DVD collection. Mm-hmm. Keith Jarrett, when I asked people what I should ask you to a person, they said, oh, why doesn't he compose anymore? We want to hear music like we heard during the European Quartet with Jan Garbarek or the American Quartet with Dewey Redman. I personally, just the other day, listened to the Köln concert.
Yeah.
And I can still weep. Why did you stop composing? And might we see a return to that?
Wow, those are lots of questions all rolled up in one. Because I made a record for CBS, then I was dropped 2 weeks later. The title is Expectations. The meaning of that title was always misconstrued to mean, here's an artist with he has great expectations for the future or something like that. I don't know, some kind of version of that. But my meaning of it was, don't have them. Expectations is what I don't think. In other words, if you think of the Köln concert and whatever albums you might have mentioned, I forget some of them.
The quartet work.
Stuff with Jan and the stuff with the American Quartet. All of that came about because nobody asked for it.
I'm sorry I asked.
No, I know there are people that want A or B or C, but if I'm going to have my integrity intact, then I'm never going to listen to that. I'm going to listen to what my heart is telling me to do. Once they start requesting it, it becomes like an electricity, a voltage surge of that one desire. And I'd rather erase that desire completely so that they're again totally open to something brand new, like at the time the Colm concert would have been, than follow their request because I'm an entertainer, which I'm not. So I think you know what I'm saying.
I don't know what you're talking about because I never ask for anything.
Oh, okay.
In the hope that I don't break any electric surge here.
Well, that's not easy to explain that stuff. Now, people would be requesting, you know, of Tony Bennett that he sings a certain encore or something. If we do an encore over and over again, it's because we still didn't get everything from that song. And we still know there's more there.
Keith Jarrett, thank you so much for taking some time to speak to us.
Thank you, Robin. We could talk a long time.